Hi, I'm Asha Tomlinson.
And I'm David Common.
And we're hosts of CBC Marketplace. We're award-winning investigative journalists that want to help you avoid clever scams, unsafe products, and sketchy services.
Our TV show has been Canada's top investigative consumer watchdog for more than 50 years, but this is our first podcast.
CBC Marketplace podcast is available now on the CBC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
We have seen these social media companies who have knowingly created an addictive product that is creating intense harm and continuing to create intense harm to our children. And it is really disrupting their education.
Putting tech giants on blast. If you're not familiar with that expression, it's a form of public shaming, usually reserved for social media users, not the platforms. Today, Ontario school boards are banding together to try and fight back from what they call the rewiring of children's brains. The companies behind TikTok, Snapchat, Facebook, and Instagram are now embroiled in a lawsuit worth billions. The allegations are worrisome, but if you have kids, maybe not all that surprising. Welcome to Your World Tonight. I'm Susan Bonner. It's Thursday, March 28th, coming up on 6 p.m. Eastern. Also on the podcast,
the federal government charges 35 cents in gasoline taxes. We charge 13 cents. Our 13 cents goes to build roads. If your environment minister would let you build roads, maybe some of yours would go to build roads as well.
We do. Thousands of them every year.
Conservative premiers make their case against the carbon tax, their testy exchanges with a House committee ahead of next week's increase, and a young Palestinian orphan escapes Gaza, but reuniting with his Canadian family may prove more difficult. It's an issue parents and educators have been struggling with for years, how to get a handle on students' use of social media. Some of the largest school boards in Canada are taking action, launching a multi-billion dollar lawsuit against several social media platforms to offset the damage they cause. Ithil Moussa has details.
We need the social media giants to rectify this problem.
Rachel Chernos-Lynn says social media apps are having a major impact on students. The Toronto District School Board chair says they're interfering with the ability of children to focus, interact with their peers, and process information.
We have been seeing a laundry list of challenges in our schools. The decline in mental health, the anxiety of students, these have skyrocketed in recent years.
And Lynn says it's time for social media apps to be held responsible. Her school board and three others in Ontario have launched lawsuits against the companies behind Snapchat, TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram, alleging the companies know their apps are addictive and cause increased rates of anxiety, depression, self-harm, and suicidal ideation among young people. Some Toronto parents agree.
It seems clear that there's a relationship there between the kids who are using the apps a lot and the severity of these kinds of symptoms.
I think that social media is a really difficult thing for students to navigate, and that these companies need to be held accountable for the way that they've transformed childhood.
The school boards allege the platforms also promote cyberbullying, harassment, hate speech, and misinformation, forcing the boards to add more staff and more programs to help kids. They're seeking about $4.5 billion in damages. Francis Sims is an associate dean at Humber College.
I think what's happening is governments, parents, school boards are trying lots of different things to make the student experience as they grow up better, right? So they're less distracted, they're more focused, and they're able to learn.
More than 30 U.S. states are already suing Meta for contributing to a youth mental health crisis on its Instagram and Facebook platforms. The Ontario lawsuits are believed to be the first of their kind in Canada.
We ban cell phones in the classroom. So.
But Ontario's Premier Doug Ford calls the lawsuits nonsense.
I disagree with them. Let's focus on the core values of education. Let's focus on math and reading and writing.
Some Toronto students admit the apps are addictive, but question whether lawsuits are the right move.
Is self-control at the end of the day?
I think that there's a lot of education in the social media platforms that the school can use. You know what I mean? Like, TikTok, like, I know a lot of stuff because of TikTok. You know what I mean?
TikTok says it has industry-leading safeguards, such as parental controls. And Snapchat says, while the company has more work to do, it feels good about the role it plays in helping close friends feel connected, happy, and prepared as they face the many challenges of adolescence. Idhilmusa, CBC News, Toronto.
Taxes are always a touchy subject, but the sound and fury surrounding the planned April 1st increase to the carbon price and the rebates that go with it has gone to a whole new level. Premiers from across the country are raising a ruckus while the Prime Minister says they aren't giving Canadians the full story. Tom Perry reports.
Point of order, Mr. Chair.
Try as they might, Liberal MPs on the House of Commons Standing Committee on Government Operations couldn't stop what they see as a political stunt.
Well, Chair, I'm confused. Why is the Premier of New Brunswick here with respect to Maine estimates?
The committee was supposed to be examining government spending. Instead, its Conservative Chair, Kelly McCauley, opened the floor to a trio of Conservative premiers to take aim at Ottawa's price on carbon.
I don't want to make this a political discussion. I want to make it about, you know, we all don't like the carbon tax. I think we can all agree with party on we don't like the carbon tax.
New Brunswick Premier Blaine Higgs, who is up for re-election this year, told the committee Canada needs to scrap the carbon tax and focus instead on helping larger countries with higher emissions cut their greenhouse gases. Alberta Premier Danielle Smith was also before the committee. Smith is raising her province's gas tax on April 1st, the same day the federal levy goes up. But Smith says Alberta's tax is to build roads, while all the federal tax is doing is hurting Canadians.
This isn't just reckless, it's immoral and it's inhumane.
Saskatchewan Premier Scott Moe, also up for re-election this year, made a similar pitch to the committee yesterday, adding his voice to a campaign that's been led loudly by federal Conservative leader Pierre Poilievre.
It is a tax designed to concentrate control in the hands of more bureaucrats and politicians in Ottawa and take that control and money away from the people who rightly earned it.
Poilievre has been holding Axe the Tax rallies from coast to coast. He was joined last night in Edmonton by Premier Danielle Smith. Poilievre and his party insist carbon pricing is costing Canadians big time. But Prime Minister Justin Trudeau says with rebates, most Canadians come out ahead.
The premiers, Conservative premiers specifically, are misleading Canadians. The Conservative opposition in Ottawa and Pierre Poilievre are not telling the truth to Canadians.
But it's not just Conservatives raising questions about the federal levy. The Liberal Premier of Newfoundland and Labrador has asked the federal government to put off the scheduled increase on April 1st. Federal Liberals say that's not going to happen. Their opponents hope that comes with a political price. Tom Perry, CBC News, Ottawa.
The Prime Minister today also revealed plans to address the growing demand for affordable childcare. Liberals are promising a $1 billion loan program to help providers expand their spaces, as well as loan forgiveness for early educators in rural and remote areas. Justin Trudeau says the measures will be included in the April 16th federal budget. In Ottawa, a new revelation at the inquiry into foreign interference has renewed questions about Elections Canada's ability to prevent meddling in our electoral process. In testimony this morning, the chief electoral officer confirmed Canada's spy agency contacted Elections Canada back in 2019 with concerns about one particular riding's nomination process. Rafi Bujikanian has details.
You were informed by CSIS of one fact-specific matter. Is that correct?
That is correct.
After weeks of testimony, the first real bit of new allegations about foreign interference at the public inquiry set up to root it out. Commission counsel Daniel Shepherd speaking to Elections Canada's chief electoral officer, Stéphane Perrault.
That could have involved foreign interference related to voting in the nomination contest in the riding of Don Valley North, Ontario. Is that correct?
That is correct.
The exact nature of what Canada's spy agency told Perrault is classified, but that it's related to a nomination and not the 2019 election itself ties Elections Canada's hands, Perrault says.
The only aspect that is regulated is the financial aspect of the nomination contest.
Don Valley North is the Toronto riding, then Liberal Han Dong won both in 2019 and 2021. Then last year, this.
I will be sitting as an independent.
Dong resigned from the Liberal Party following allegations he'd spoken to a Chinese diplomat in order to recommend against Beijing freeing Canadians Michael Spavor and Michael Kovrig, allegations Dong has denied. His lawyer did not interview Perrault today, but another MP's lawyer did. Gib Van Aert, counsel for conservative Michael Chong, who was an alleged victim of election interference by the Chinese government.
If voters were bussed in from outside a riding into another riding to vote in some federal party's nomination contest, contrary to the rules of that party's proceedings, that would not be a matter for Elections Canada.
No, we have no authority to intervene in that regard.
Elections Canada says the nomination process is controlled by political parties, an issue political observers have been pointing out for years.
Parties control the rules, they enforce the rules, and they're often run by volunteers.
Aaron Tolley teaches political science at Carleton University.
If you're looking for a sort of soft underbelly of the democratic process, and there were bad actors who wanted to interfere in elections in some way, party nominations really would be a place.
She says there has traditionally been little political will to do anything to change that, and the inquiry may raise more public awareness about the issue as it hears from different witnesses. Han Dong himself expected next week. Rafi Bujikan, CBC News, Ottawa.
Coming up on the podcast, his name is Yahya, and he has a haunting story. Can a Gazan orphan get a new life in Canada? We'll tell you about an encouraging new therapy to fight bacteria and why so many arts festivals are fighting to survive. The UN's top court is ordering Israel to ensure more aid and supplies are allowed into Gaza. People in the territory are facing widespread famine, and the UN says only a fraction of relief is getting through. Today's measures from the International Court of Justice are part of a case brought by South Africa accusing Israel of genocide. Israel strongly denies those claims. The numbers are staggering. UNICEF says 17,000 children in Gaza have lost their parents or been separated from their families. One of those children, 9-year-old Yahya Hamad, is an orphan. He made it to Egypt and has an uncle in Canada. But as Chris Brown explains, significant barriers remain that may keep him from reuniting with his family.
Israel's attacks on Gaza took away almost everything that 9-year-old Yahya Hamad had ever known. His parents, his sister, and two brothers were killed when a rocket flattened the Gaza home they'd been staying in. He was buried alive in the rubble, leaving his bones crushed and his body in immense pain. But despite his terrible losses, Yahya now has some hope. Earlier this week, he was given permission to leave Gaza for medical treatment in Egypt. I'm happy to be going abroad to get treatment, he told a videographer working for CBC News as he boarded an ambulance for the Rafah crossing. I want to see my uncle in Canada. For perspective, there are more than 600,000 children crowded into southern Gaza, says UNICEF, and 40% of the patients at the main Al-Najjar hospital are children. Dr. Jabbar Al-Shahir says Israel only approves one or two transfers out of Gaza to Egypt a day. The number of serious injuries is very high, in the thousands, he said, and the transfers out are too few. Canada has a family reunification program for people who manage to get to Egypt, and Yahya would be eligible. But his uncle in Montreal says the cost of the boy's medical bills make him apprehensive to apply. The Emirates, Turkey, Qatar, Egypt, and Turkey all cover the costs of medical bills of people coming from Gaza, said Mahar Hamad, but Canada does not. That means his family would have to pay tens of thousands of dollars toward Yahya's recovery, which they can't afford. Canada's reunification program still appears to be waiting for its first success. In a statement, the Immigration Department said 986 people have applied, 32 have been approved, but so far it appears none have actually arrived in the country. For children still in Gaza, the pleas for help from UN agencies are dire, about starvation, especially in the north and in the south, where Israel is threatening to launch a ground assault on crowded Rafah. James Elder of UNICEF, who's in Rafah, says the place is packed with children and families.
600,000 girls and boys, a military offensive here. Yeah, I mean, it looks like a bloodbath.
As for Yahya, he'll stay in an Egyptian hospital for now. His uncle told us he's relieved his nephew is out of the war and his family is committed to helping him restart his life. Chris Brown, CBC News, London.
Maryland's governor says Baltimore's recovery from Tuesday's bridge disaster will be difficult. A cargo ship hit a pillar of the structure, causing it to collapse into the Patapsco River. Two bodies have been recovered from the water. Wes Moore offered his condolences to their families today.
Baltimore is being tested right now, but Baltimore has been tested before. And every time we stand up on 2 feet, we dust ourselves off, and we keep moving forward. This work is not going to take hours. This work is not going to take days. This work is not going to take weeks. We have a very long road ahead of us.
Four men who were working on the bridge are still missing and are believed dead. The U.S. Coast Guard says the ship had just received routine engine maintenance. Officials say the investigation could last 2 years. A 25-year prison sentence has been handed down to former cryptocurrency mogul Sam Bankman-Fried. Last November, he was convicted of fraud and conspiracy after his once-soaring trading platform, FTX, declared bankruptcy. The scheme was described by one prosecutor as one of the biggest financial frauds in U.S. history. Here's senior business reporter Anis Haidari.
We'll stop once more so you can all...
Carrying umbrellas, Sam Bankman-Fried's parents didn't have much to say outside of court.
How are you feeling today?
They'd just found out their son, otherwise known as SBF, is heading to prison for more than two decades. He'd been convicted back in November of fraud and conspiracy. This morning, he was sentenced to 25 years. It's all over the collapse of FTX. The company was run by SBF and was one of the world's most popular trading platforms for cryptocurrency such as Bitcoin. But in 2022, it collapsed, and a jury eventually found the company had been patching over drops in cryptocurrency values using customer deposits it shouldn't have. Billions of dollars that belonged to customers and other investors seemingly gone. Cryptocurrency watchers like Stephen Ehrlich of Forbes say part of what drove this sentencing was a pattern of behavior.
The prosecution was able to show multiple times where Sam had the opportunity to do the right thing, to come clean, and he chose not to do so.
The judge in the U.S. District Court also ordered SBF to forfeit more than $11 billion U.S. dollars, which could go to some of the victims. But it's unclear when or how that would happen, or if that money exists right now. Mark Kasten is a lawyer who often works in cryptocurrency enforcement, though he's not involved in this case.
The court doesn't take into account the ability to pay when they order restitution. That will come later. We don't know if he has $11.2 billion, where that'll come from, but if he has it and he comes up with it, then he will have to pay it.
The 25-year sentence falls short of what prosecutors were asking for. They wanted 40 to 50 years. But Kasten points out concepts like parole work differently in the U.S. federal system than in Canada. So SBF will probably be behind bars for at least, if not more, than half that sentence. And the judge explicitly pointed out that he considered SBF to be at risk of doing something very bad in the future.
So if Judge Kaplan, as he said, thinks that there's a risk that Bankman-Fried would return from a short prison stint and reoffend and engage in similar behavior, then that's something he had to take into account when imposing the sentence. And it's clear he thinks that was a risk.
Years in prison and on the hook for $11 billion plus. It's a big and expensive fall from grace for the 32-year-old who had only started his crypto exchange back in 2019. Anis Hidari, CBC News, Calgary.
Canada's economy kicked off 2024 with a better-than-expected start. Statistics Canada says GDP for January rose 0.6%. Economists attributed the results to the end of labor disputes in the education and entertainment sectors. If you are a movie, music, or comedy fan, you may have noticed there seems to be fewer cultural events in Canada to choose from this year. You're not imagining things. Several annual arts festivals in this country have been scaled back or canceled altogether in recent months. And as Eli Glasner tells us, even more are at risk of turning off the lights.
In America, our country is experiencing so much strife and conflict and division. And so I was really excited to come to Canada where there'd be no drama.
Don Porter is the American director of the new Luther Vandross movie scheduled to open Toronto's Hot Docs Film Festival next month. But the past few weeks, there have been serious concerns about the festival's viability. An international festival, she says, is critical for filmmakers.
When a film premieres here, it makes news. It is really important for the life of the film, but also for the life of our communities.
Earlier this month, Hot Docs president Maureen Nelson was the first to raise the alarm about whether the popular film festival could continue.
We're in a post-pandemic period where, you know, we're still experiencing the hangover of the impact on all of our operations. You know, for 2 years, we shuttered our cinema.
She says pausing operations and changes in audience behavior have taken a toll.
Fundamentally, that has left organizations like Hot Docs really teetering.
It's far from alone. Every week, it seems, there's news of another organization struggling. Toronto's Fringe Festival is at risk. From Vancouver to Regina, a number of folk festivals have closed, and Montreal's Just for Laughs is filing for bankruptcy.
I've never seen such a situation.
Martin Roy is executive director of the organization Festivals and Major Events. He says inflation is another huge challenge many festivals are struggling with.
We estimate that it costs festivals and events 30 to 40% more to organize an event this year compared to 2019.
But some effects can't be quantified. In Winnipeg, the start of the folk festival is always celebrated as the first sign of summer.
You can just see the tension leaving people's shoulders as the first day they're coming straight from work and they just relax.
Jill Wilson is the arts and life editor at the Winnipeg Free Press. She says although Winnipeg Folk Fest is a go, it's feeling the ripple effects of other festival closures.
It prevents the block booking that across Canada where bands can go from city to city to city. And if those stops are missing on either side of Winnipeg, it means we miss out as well.
Another factor, most festivals depend on public funding, but Martin Roy says that is stuck in the past.
If I talk about heritage, Canadian heritage, we live on the same budget basis as back in 2008.
Organizers say investing in the arts makes good business sense. But audiences have a big role to play, too, by showing their support while they can. Eli Glasser, CBC News, Toronto.
After years of failed treatments, an Ottawa-area woman has become one of the first in Canada to receive an experimental therapy developed in Winnipeg. Phage therapy uses viruses to fight bacteria. It's currently not available outside of clinical trials. But as Karen Pauls reports, researchers at the Ottawa Hospital hope this case will change that.
Are you ready for your next dose?
I am.
Okay. Dr. Marisa Azad gives 79-year-old Tia Turcotte a dose of the phage therapy designed to attack the bacterial infection after a hip replacement. The infection had become resistant to most antibiotics. Azad says Turcotte had developed a severe toxicity to the only one that still worked. Doctors were recommending amputation of her leg.
This is probably one of the worst periprosthetic joint infections I'd encountered in my career. I was extremely limited in what we can do to treat her, and really, this was the end of the line.
So Azad suggested phage therapy. Phages are viruses that only infect bacteria. injecting their genetic information inside, creating more of themselves until they burst out, looking for more bacteria to kill. Early on, phages caught the attention of researchers, but penicillin and antibiotics sent phage therapy to the fringes. With antibiotic resistance growing, some European countries are now starting to allow it. But in Canada, it's still experimental and not available for healthcare outside of clinical trials.
So this was my last resort. I had no other choice.
Turcott says she was grateful when Health Canada authorized a rare single-patient clinical trial.
It was very scary, also exciting. It was do or die.
This is the bacterial colonies.
Swabs of the bacteria infecting Turcott were sent to Stephen Terrio. He and his team at Cytophage Technologies in Winnipeg used that sample to create a phage specifically for Turcott.
What we do is ensure that our bacteriophage that we do use is killing the patient's bacteria at a very high level, so 100% or 98%, making sure that we get rid of that bacterial infection. What we're doing here is actually creating a solution for patients that don't have any solutions because of antimicrobial resistance and antibiotic resistance.
Nearly 4 weeks after her first treatment, Turcott's body is responding well.
I'm just so happy to be here, to be able to be with my family, with my children, my grandchildren and great-grandchildren. I have a lot to live for.
Back in Ottawa, Azad says she's already planning another clinical trial.
You know, a lot of the patients that I see with these infections, they have severe depression, they have suicidal thoughts. Some patients have amputations, chronic pain. It's a terrible quality of life. And for me to be able to say, you know what, there's hope, that's worth more than anything.
I'm being spoiled all the time. So.
For Tia Turcott and her family, it's worth everything. Karen Pauls, CBC News, Winnipeg.
No, that's not a clip from Taylor Swift's latest Eras Tour show. It's an enthusiastic crowd of girls singing at a recent professional women's hockey league game. When Ottawa played Boston, there was a mid-game sing-along to You Belong With Me, with lyrics provided on the Jumbotron. The TikTok creator who posted the clip can be heard saying, "I don't think we need the lyrics." And he's proven right seconds later. The moment has now blown up online. One commentator said, "Anything that makes them sing out in unison like that is exactly what the world needs right now." Another user summed it up pretty nicely, saying, "I love girlhood." Thank you for joining us. This has been Your World Tonight for March 28th. I'm Susan Bonner. Talk to you again.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.